broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It's sad. We just met with these people.
But what is hurting us right now, economically, are statements, false statements.
We were watching the entire group.
You know, I have to tell you, I'll give them credit for getting a big crowd. Look,
I am gay.
He's stupid.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And there's a new character in the Archie comics who says,
I am gay.
His name is Kevin Keller, and we're going to talk about that tonight. We also have coming up this evening Harvey Weierman with Senior Chat. We're also going to be talking to Dr. Ron Tarner this evening about the latest. Stephen Hawking has said that the universe was not created by God. The universe was created by gravity. And Ron Tarner joins us this evening to discuss that. And in a moment, we have a gentleman we haven't had on for a while, Reverend David Casanova of Casanova Ministries. And we'll discuss his youth ministry and some controversial prayer counseling that they are giving there. 877-876-PHIL. Other big news, obviously, that we'll be talking about, the nut that went into the Discovery Channel. Apparently, Jan Brewer had a bad time starting out her debate last night in Arizona, although when I was actually reading the story, it doesn't look like it was all that bad. And other big news tonight. Plus, we'll tell you who led the cops to, or what led the cops to shooting and killing James Lee, James J. Lee, who was the guy that took over the Discovery building yesterday. 877-876-PHIL, our affiliate spotlight tonight on Charlotte, North Carolina, WBCN 1660 AM, and Augusta, Georgia, a new affiliate there, WNRR 1380 AM. And we have a new affiliate coming on in Phoenix, Arizona. And we haven't been on in Phoenix in a while, and so I guess we're going to have to start talking good about Phoenix again, which, you know, and like that. Our website, philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com, live streaming video of the show right now, as well as live streaming audio, as well as video on demand, as well as all of our archives, downloads made every day. We've got new downloads from 2002 that have just gone into our archives as well. It's the most complete, and it's the largest collection of a single radio show's archives anywhere. Our website, philhendryshow.com. It's well worth the backstage pass, $6.95 a month, and you get hour after hour after hour, over 3,000, 4,000 hours of the greatest radio show in the history of the world. Thank you. All right, 877-876-PHIL. And Reverend David Casanova joining us here this evening on our newsmaker line to talk about a lot of things, Reverend Casanova, including the idea, the notion that when a young man asks a young lady out on a date, that he needs to kind of turn the whole social norm on its head, right?
Well, Phil, I think that I think that's a good way of putting it, because in our youth ministry, and being at the head of a Christian ministry these days, Phil, means that you've got an enormous responsibility to not only inform people of the gospel of Jesus Christ, but it's also very, very important to stay in touch with the contemporary viewpoint and notions of the people you're in touch with. That's why our ministry is a bit different from other people. We really want to stay in the world as is, and not necessarily pine away for a world that we hope it to be. Although, obviously, we all want the world to be a better place, you know.
Of course.
But we do recognize that there are challenges every day that have to be met head on. And you can do that through the Bible. You can do that through the Word of Jesus Christ.
But the reason why I said that is one of the blogs that I saw posted on your site said, is it always a good idea to tell a girl she looks nice when you're taking her out on a date, right?
Yeah, that was for our youth ministry and our youth prayer counselors. And it's just part of some of the blogging that I like to do for young people, because our church, our ministry, is focused largely on younger people.
What does that mean, it's not always a good idea to tell a girl she looks good?
Well, it is not always a good idea, and young men make this mistake all the time, Phil. As understandable as it is, It's a mistake that's made all the time by young men when they say to a girl, you look nice tonight. It is considered to be a very polite thing, certainly considered to be something that's part of the social norm.
Yeah.
But it's not a good idea all the time. If she does not look good, we tell our young men through our prayer counselors, if it's not a good idea to tell her she looks good if she doesn't look good. It's a better idea to say to her, you don't look good tonight, and I'll tell you why, Phil.
Wow. I mean, that's that doesn't really take into consideration a woman's ego, does it?
No. Well, yes, it does. Yes, it does. I'll tell you why it does, okay? And this is why I'm very proud of what we do in our ministry, because we're not stuffy and we're not old school and we're not, you know, good old-time religion. We recognize we have to live in this world. If you tell a young lady when you go to pick her up on a date, and we tell our young men this all the time, and you say to her, if she doesn't look good, no, you don't. You don't look good tonight. But you know something? As we get to know each other tonight, I'm sure you're going to look better and better to me. And that allows that young woman to put out of her mind completely how she looks, how she's presenting herself, and she can begin to be the person that she really is, and that young man can get to know her on that level to the point where she's really going to open up. Now, here is the tricky part about that, Phil. We think this is so effective for a young man when he's talking to a young woman that at the end of the evening, they are very much romantically attached. And that's that moment where you have to make that decision. Am I going to do this, something that could change my life? Is it wrong if it brings you closer to Jesus Christ to have sex? We don't think so.
You're kidding. You're talking about young people here.
I understand that. But if you have said to her at the beginning of the evening, I don't think you look good tonight. I don't think you look good at all. And by the end of the evening, she is very attracted to you and appreciates the honesty and appreciates your humanity to the point where she is romantically attracted to you and is willing to take that very big step. If that's going to get her to a place to hear your message about Jesus Christ, is that bad? And that's what I ask our young people.
Yeah, there are people, though, that would argue if you are you're talking about engaging in sex, two young people engaging in sex.
If that is going to bring her closer to Jesus Christ as her Savior.
Yep. Well, okay, so there are going to be people who are going to argue that's impossible. If you're having sex, you can't
get close to Jesus?
Exactly.
That's wrong. That's wrong. And I'll tell you what.
That's wrong?
That is absolutely wrong. I'll tell you what. First of all, if I throw down my life to save my fellow man, the greatest love of all is the love to give your life for someone else. If I'm willing to throw my life down for my fellow man, and I did that coming out of a whorehouse, let's say I was a wicked man, and I threw my life down for another man coming out of a whorehouse, I want to ask you, Phil, do you think the kingdom of God is denied to me?
I don't. You're asking me Christian doctrine.
Christian doctrine tells us that if a man lays down his life for another man, there's no greater love.
I suppose the answer that you want me to give is yes.
Is that not the answer that you want to give?
It's difficult for me to, just the little Christianity that I had. I mean, I was raised Catholic, and I don't know. I'm not intimately in aware of the particulars. You know, it's difficult to say that two young people that you have advised to go out on a date.
Now, we haven't said go out on a date and have sex. We have said to the young man, don't tell her, if she doesn't look good, don't tell her she looks good.
All right, and if a young man says to a young woman, you don't look good tonight, I don't think you look good, she's more likely to be closer to him.
She is more likely to understand. This is always, this is kind of a lot of fun for me, Phil, because I always have to explain this to people. They can never figure this out. Why would a young lady want to have sex with a young man who just told her she doesn't look good? Because you're doing it with love. You're saying to her with love, you don't look good to me tonight. But by the end of the night, I'm really hoping you do look better and better and better, and I think you will, if you'll hear what I've got to say. And so the evening commences to the point where she's now comfortable with him and would likely have sex with him. That means to me that you have made that girl comfortable, and that means to me that you've done that through the Word of God, and therefore...
Therefore, that is a good thing, that sex?
I don't want to concentrate on the sex. I'm just saying that I would hate for that young man's good work, having told that girl the truth that she didn't look good, having his good work not be rewarded.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL. I'm talking to Reverend David Casanova, David Casanova Ministries, on a blog recently. It was called "It's Not Always a Good Idea to Tell Her She Looks Good," and that's one of these things. Is we're basically talking about a normal, cordial relations between a man and a woman. And you're starting very young with a young man and a young woman, telling him, you know, it's a good idea when you pick a girl up for a date, when you're about to take her out, tell her she looks nice.
Well, that's what a lot of young men are taught.
I know, I understand that, but you're saying that's not always a good idea.
It is not always a good idea, simply because...
All right, you're being honest, and we're always told that honesty is the best policy, but the ego of a woman and the vanity of a woman, which is like the vanity of a man, especially when you're going out on a date with a young man that you have agreed to see, you got to want to look good. And if you tell her she doesn't...
Phil, trust me. This is something... I know that you understand women, Phil. You've told me if you live long enough, you do.
That's the truth.
All right. But I lived a life before I turned myself over to Jesus Christ. I lived a very sinful life. And I don't want to tell you what it was that I did. But I had occasion to be around a lot of women. And this was a profession.
Were you a pimp?
I don't want to say what I did. But I learned a lot about women and their vanity. If she says to you, how do I look? And you say, you know, you don't look good. But, you don't say you don't look good and I don't want to go out with you. You say you don't look good. But I think you'll start to look better. I think you will look better as the evening progresses if you hear what I got to say. And you begin to tell her why she doesn't look good and why you were honest to tell her that. But it's really about Jesus Christ. And the next thing you know, she wants to sleep with you. And if sleeping with her is going to get her all the way over to the other side, then it's difficult for me to say not to do.
Very unusual ministry. Thank you. Hold on. David Casanova from David Casanova Ministries. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. As he talks about, first of all, when a young man takes a young lady out, don't always tell her she looks good if she doesn't. And secondly, it will probably lead her to want to have sex with that young man, and he should go ahead and engage in that sexual activity with her, because that might just lead her all the way to Jesus. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry Show.
For the second time in as many months, we have with us David Casanova, the Casanova Ministries, located in Norco, California. And David, it's good to talk with you. You're an honest man. You're very, very unusual in what it is you preach. I have to ask you, do you believe you're preaching the Bible and the gospel of Jesus Christ?
Well, I feel I would not be engaged in this work if I did not think that I was preaching the truth. The truth. From the mouth of God, from the Son of God, from Jesus Christ. Of course I do. I understand it's unusual, but I'm trying to bring people to God, not drive them away. And if I'm judgmental, if I say to a young man, don't have sex with that girl, if that splits them and drives her away from the truth, that's a young woman that could have heard the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, if that young man would have agreed to go to bed with her and maybe engage in something that is distasteful to him. That's another thing you have to understand.
And well, why would he do that?
If we remember the example I gave you at the beginning of the evening, I said, if she does not look good, be honest with her and tell her she doesn't look good. And so if you say to a young lady, she says, well, how do I look? Well, I have to be honest with you, you don't look good. You don't look good at all, but I think by the end of this evening, as I get to know you and you get to know me, you're going to start to look a whole lot better to me. And what he means by that is, I'm going to make you forget about your looks and forget about all it. Let's just talk about what's true, the Word of God. And by the end of the night, they're in bed. And by the end of the night, you know, as one of our prayer counselors said, by the end of the night, they're making noise two motel rooms over, you know. And so,
boy, I cannot feature anybody. What is your relationship like with other ministers, with other men of the cloth?
Oh, I Phil, I don't worry about them. I don't worry about them. They're very judgmental people. I don't worry about them at all. I think a lot of them are jealous. They know I do a youth ministry. They know that I have my thing and I have my way of communicating.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. I'm going to get some phone calls here for Reverend David Casanova this evening. Calling from Ontario, Canada, listening on CFRB. Christine, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Reverend Casanova. Go ahead, please.
Hi, hello?
Yes, ma'am, you're on the air.
Hi, I don't understand how telling a woman at the beginning of a date, how that would in any way get anybody closer to God. I mean, being closer to God is just, if you don't like the way yeah. somebody looks, you just don't say anything at all. And I don't understand how getting a woman into yeah. bed is getting anybody closer to God if it's sex before marriage.
Well, I'll tell you, Christine, this is David. When a young lady is worried about how she looks, the best thing in our mind to begin the communication process on a date between two young people is for the young man to say, you don't look nice, you don't look good at all, but I have faith that you are going to start looking better. That makes her not worry about how she looks.
She would right
to appreciate that young man's
very self-conscious as to how I look. Can't he just think to himself in his head, you know what, I'm not attracted to her right now, but maybe by the end of the day she'll turn out to be a wonderful person. I think she's beautiful. Because
I don't look good, I'm going home. That's what he would say to himself, but what does he say to her? He wants to include her in this process of maturation and this process of growth into the light of Jesus Christ and into the light of spiritual truth. And so by the end of the evening, she appreciates that. She recognizes what he did for the two of them at the beginning of the evening, to the point where she does want to have a sexual union with him, and it becomes something very blessed.
I wouldn't want to be sexually involved with anybody who doesn't think I'm attractive.
It's not.
And I don't understand why you would be encouraging sex before marriage.
I don't encourage it. But what I do say is, if it's going to bring a young lady closer to God, remember, this is a young man that didn't think she looked all that good to begin with. So having sex with her, in a lot of ways, is a sacrifice for him. But it can bring her to Jesus.
Well, wait a minute. You said, though, if you don't mind me interrupting, Christine, by the end of the night, she's going to look better.
By the end of the night, yes, exactly. But I can't guarantee how he's going to feel about her. But let's say he said to her at the beginning of the night, you know, you don't look good at all, and wow, you know. But by the end of the night, she's attracted to him and would like to continue their relationship.
No woman in her right mind is going to be attracted to anybody who tells her that she doesn't look good. If somebody tells you that you don't look good, they are flat out mean, and that's just disrespectful. And being disrespectful and mean to people, it doesn't get anybody closer to God. God does not teach disrespect and hurt.
Oh, that is
And God
absolutely
does not
true.
Teach sex before marriage.
You're absolutely right, Christine. God does not teach disrespect. But I submit to you, this is not disrespect. I submit to you, this is the ultimate respect for a young man to say to a young woman, I bet you think you look good. Well, no, you don't.
I think you're just setting a lot of young men up for slaps across the face.
No, ma'am. No, not at all. I can tell you that I have testimonials from young men who have been to bed with...
I would love to meet these young men who have told women at the beginning of the night that you don't look good,
yes, ma'am.
They end up in bed with each other. That's a scary, frightening thought. I don't know who these people are, but wow.
Well,
I guess honesty is the best policy,
right.
But there's a difference between honesty and just being mean and then hoping to get someone into bed anyways.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. And so we're not talking about being mean. We're talking about being honest through love and through Jesus Christ.
All right, so you're talking about some kind of an honesty that is kind, but this young lady is saying what I suspect a lot of young women would think, is that, wow, it's tough for a woman to get herself ready on a date for a young man, and then to have the guy say, you don't look good, is quite a crushing thing. But we'll be back. Thank you, Christine. I have David Casanova from the Casanova Ministries, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous, groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show.
What I'm saying is,
Phil Hendry.
And this works with gay sex, too.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here with Reverend David Casanova. And on the Casanova Ministries blog last week was the among many things that you feature there for young people, because your ministry is designed primarily for young people, is kind of a dating advice, David?
Well, Phil, it's generally run by my wife, Jennifer. I submitted this last week because Jennifer was sick.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so we really needed some ideas for our dating blog, and so I submitted that one, and I think that it goes hand in hand with what we teach in our Saturday school, our Saturday school for young men, our Sunday school for young women, and that is, if you tell her at the beginning of the night, if you're honest with her, young lady, they're going to take out, you're honest, and you're open. And you don't nag her about it. You just say, we had a young man tell us that he had asked a girl out he'd seen at one of our church services. And when he picked her up, he knew, because he did not find her attractive when he asked her out. So he knew what he was going to think when she answered the door.
And, well, why did he ask her out?
Because he wanted to bring this girl closer to the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So when she answered the door, I think he said something like, I knew you'd look like something like a cow.
Oh, he did not.
He did. But here is the magic of that kind of honesty. She appreciated that. And gradually, as the evening wore on, she didn't care any longer how she looked. I think they went out and had a meal that you would think a young lady who's just been told she looks like a cow would not eat that much. But she went out with him. And they had a big chicken dinner somewhere, and wound up getting ice cream and cake, and she was as relaxed as can be, and very appreciative of this young man's honesty at the end of the night, so that they wound up not quite making it back home, you know, if you know what I mean on that date. So this is part of the magic and the mystery of the Holy Spirit. And how the Holy Spirit works in bringing that grace into a young person's life.
You're mentioning the Holy Spirit, and you're talking about a young man picking a girl up for a date, telling her she looks like a cow. She's eating cake and ice cream, and they wind up at a motel. I've never heard the Holy Spirit in the same context with those topics.
That is what I think makes our ministry unique. And that is why I think we attract so many young people to it.
877-876-PHIL, our number. Let's go over to Keith in Raleigh, North Carolina. You're on the Phil Hendry Show here with David Casanova. Keith, go ahead, please.
Yes, I just want to say that's false teaching, and that is not the biblical doctrine. The thing that you're teaching is going to encourage young people to have sex and think that they're doing Jesus Christ a service. That's false doctrine. You won't find you will not find that teaching nowhere in the Bible.
Well, what if they don't have sex? What if he just tells her at the beginning of the night, you don't look good, but they do fall in love?
Well, if he tells her
to look good, that's what I'm, right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
But you're also saying... You're also saying that the sex part is okay.
But I'm just saying to Keith right now, just for the purposes of us, I don't say you're going to wind up having sex. I'm saying that's kind of a side issue that, yes, I mean, if it brings somebody closer to Jesus. But what I'm saying is, if they do wind up falling in love and coming closer to Christ because he just told her, just like that man the other night, that she looks like a cow. Now, you have to admit, that is the Holy Spirit at work.
No, that's not the Holy Spirit at work. That's the doctrine of the devil. Let me tell you something.
What you're trying to say is,
when this young man is talking to this woman, telling her about Jesus Christ, that is going to make her attracted to him. And if she wants to sleep with him, then he should go ahead and do that, because that's going to bring her closer to Jesus Christ. How is he going to bring her closer to Jesus Christ?
See, the fact that you asked that question shows me that you've never, like a lot of Christians, have never really thought about that. And I will tell you how. Love, obviously, is the beginning of any family. Family is the nuclear unit. The creation of a love through Jesus Christ is what we want in the Christian community. So why would you question? That's not it. The expression of love through physicality, I would argue, is very much love. But you haven't answered my question. If he tells her she looks like a farm animal, and they get together as Christians, what's wrong with that?
What do you mean, get together?
I mean, if they don't sleep together.
He tells her she looks like a...
I don't understand what you...
But what you're saying is it's okay to commit fornication. How can you be a preacher of the gospel and saying that it's okay to have sex before you marry, committing fornication?
Keith, I'll tell you something, because I didn't want to bring this up, and I told Phil I didn't want to bring it up, but because Phil guessed it. Before I came to Jesus Christ, I did, like a lot of us, I did every sin in the book. I was truly a sinful man. I was breathing the breath of the devil every day of my life. I worked as a pimp in Atlanta, Georgia. But one day, as I told a story in it, but I didn't put myself in it, one day I had left this place where I had collected some money from one of these women. And I saw a man, I pushed a man out of the way of a truck that had a brake had come off. And I remember the words of Jesus Christ that I'd learned as a child, which is the greatest love a man can have for another man is that he would give his life. And I realized that I was ready to give my life for that man, even though I was a pimp, I was a sinner, I was a drug user, I drank alcohol, I did it all. And I realized then that even though I committed all those sins, I was in the grace of God at that moment, you see. So,
wait a second, man. I mean, that's one thing that's admirable, but you're saying that you can be in the grace of God while consciously committing a sin.
I don't know what you're talking. Is the guy there? Keith there? Yeah, he's there.
You can't.
So you know what I mean, Keith. I don't understand what you're saying, Phil. I don't think you understand. Keith and I are talking about this, you know. What do you got to do with it?
I'm asking you a question. You know, how can you say that you have the grace of God on you when you know you're committing a sin?
I just got done telling you. I was a pimp, and I still saved a man's life.
Well, did you know the minute that you saved that man's life that you were okay in the eyes of God?
Yeah, I thought I did everything right.
Even though you were a pimp?
I just saved a man's life.
Well, I don't know. Keith?
I think Keith understands. I think Keith understands. He's having a good time here. You know what I mean, don't you, Keith? You understand what I'm saying? Are you kidding? You're telling me, you're laughing, that you can't be a full-on pimp. I mean, I'm talking about I saw Fats Domino's Cadillac, and I said, I got to have one just like that. Fats Domino had a purple Cadillac. I said, I went out and got a purple Cadillac. I was a pimp.
Well, I don't know what you bringing up Fats Domino has to do with it.
I'm just saying he had a purple Cadillac.
But you know what?
All right, Keith.
You don't have to necessarily be a born-again believer to do nice things or to do good things. I mean, I'm not a saved person. I'm not a born-again, Christian. But I do good things. But that don't mean that, I'm a preacher.
You were saying that you can tell a girl she's a girl, and she looks like a farm animal.
Yeah, she looks like a cow. I mean, right. First of all, if you got the love of God in your heart, why would you, degrade a woman like that? I mean, she looks like a cow.
That's not degrading her. That's telling her that's the starting point for us tonight. But I know you're gonna look better as the night goes on.
All right. Keith, thank you very much for your call. 877-876-PHIL. The gentleman's got an interesting phone there. It sounds like he's cutting in and out. Let's go over to Sarah in Nashville, Tennessee. Sarah, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with David Casanova. Go ahead, please.
I think that man understood what I
was saying. I'm just very offended as a Christian. I don't know. This might be the scariest conversation I think I've ever heard. I've never heard belief, and it's just... It is so scary to me.
I don't think it's scary at all, Sarah. I'm certainly not trying to scare you. I'm saying at the beginning of a date, if a young man looks at a girl and she expects him to say...
Oh, I'm not concerned about that. If she asks how I look, then she needs to be ready to receive that. That doesn't bother me at all.
No. I'm not saying if she asks. I'm saying he volunteers it anyway, whether she asks or not.
So when she answers the door, he just says, by the way, you don't look good.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, I don't want to focus on that part because that doesn't bother me. I mean, it bothers me, but that's not what scares me the most.
Have you ever been told that? I'm just curious. Have you ever been told that?
I don't feel like that's any of your business, and no, I haven't.
I'm just wondering if a young man has said to you, boy, you look, this is going to be tough tonight looking at you. That's never happened.
And I would say, time and leave. But again, I don't want to focus on that. What I'd like to focus on is how he's manipulated scripture to approve of him sleeping with a woman and how he feels like he can. A relationship with God is between a person and with God. And by saying that him sleeping with her is going to lead her to Christ is a lie.
This
is so scary to me.
I'm not saying that's going to lead her. It's not going to lead her to Christ. I'm saying that if that's what she wants, in order for her to hear this message, then he has to. Again, you have to understand something, Sarah. This is a young man that just said to that girl, "Boy, this is going to be rough on me." So it's not like he wants to sleep with her. You see, that's the difference.
So you're making him a martyr, and in the meantime,
no, he's not. No,
what he wants,
no,
sexually.
No, he doesn't want it. That's what I'm saying. He wants to be anywhere other than that.
No, then he needs to read his Bible again. Because God tells us, a true Christian man would have gotten out of Scripture that he needs to stand up and say, you know what?
Right.
God's commanded me not to have sex before marriage, so we're not going to do that.
Exactly. But see, here's the thing. We've got a lot of Muslims running around.
Where in the Bible does it say it's okay to do that?
Well, it doesn't say in the Bible, first of all, Sarah, that it's... It does not say in the Bible, you may not have sex if you're not married. That does not, it's not in the Bible. That's the result
of... It doesn't say not to have premarital sex?
No, it does not. It does say, honor the marital contract. It does say, do not envy or covet your fellow's wife. It does say that, but it does not say...
It does say sex is to be between a husband and a wife.
Well, yeah, but you see, a husband and a wife... What is that exactly? You see, I maintain in our ministry that if you tell a girl that she's rough on the eyes, but you still want to be with her, that makes you closer to her than a lot of men and women are in marriage. Okay?
Now, come on, man. That's... Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what has happened with that kind of honesty. That's exactly what happened.
No, I'm sorry. You are so wrong. And I'm offended that you're considering this a ministry.
Are you a minister? Do you have a church?
Oh, absolutely.
No. I mean, are you a minister?
No.
Okay.
But
I am.
I'm a Christian. I've been raised in the church, and this is just absurd.
Right. But I'm saying because I am a minister, I'm a little further up the trough.
Oh no!
And whoa! Wait a minute. Just because
no, I'm a minister. You know, they make the joke, do you have a turnaround collar, you know? But I'm a minister, so I'm a little bit further up the slop trough.
Oh,
right?
I'm so sorry, but I disagree. Jesus put himself on earth and considered himself of man, and of man equally.
Yeah, well,
ministers are not any better than anyone.
If you look at the Last Supper, who's sitting in the middle of the table? You got it.
Well, that's from the perspective of the person that painted the picture. If the if his perspective was somehow oriented towards someone else, it would have looked like that.
What?
Oh, I just...
If you look at that painting...
You know,
I am so sorry, sir. I am praying for you. This is just sick.
No, ma'am. You misunderstood the closeness that a man and woman can have when he's with her, and he'd rather be anywhere else but with her. That's love. That's Christian love.
That's Christian love when he stays on a date with a girl that he'd rather not be out on the date with.
He just got done telling her, you don't look good.
Okay. Anyway, Sarah, thank you very much for your call this evening and joining in the conversation. David Casanova is with us. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. I want to ask you before I go to break here, David. What do you mean further up the slop trough, you know?
No, Phil, I'm an old farm boy from the desert in California. I'm saying that when you're a minister of a church, which is what I am, so I have I got a collar. You're up the trough. You're way up the trough from where the end of the trough is in the street. I'm up near in the saloon.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here with David Casanova on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the Phil Hendry Show. Next hour, Dr. Ron Tarner joins us, and we will discuss, speaking of God, Reverend Casanova's on the line with us right now, and I was going to ask him about Stephen Hawking's statement that God did not create the universe. Gravity did. Did you hear that, David?
Phil, I did hear that, and I thought it was unfortunate. I thought a man of his... standing in the scientific community and his standing in the world, really. Stephen Hawking is known by so many people. I thought it was unfortunate for him to say something so cruel and so utterly without any foundation, really, in reasonableness and the fact that he would say that God had no hand in creating this beautiful, beautiful place that we live, this world, this universe of ours. And what we're doing is we're bringing more people to God. And, you know, God created sex. I'm not encouraging young people to have sex, but I'm saying that if the Holy Spirit has worked its way through those two young people from a very, from a beginning where he told her, you don't look good at all to me, to let's go any motel you spot. I don't even care what the nightly rate is. I would say that's growth.
And is it growth in God, though?
I would say as long as you're talking about it, yes. If he's talking about the gospel.
877-876-PHIL here on the Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to a phone call in Desert Hot Springs, California. Debbie, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Debbie.
You are like no preacher I ever heard. I don't believe you're a pastor. There is no pastor that would ever encourage anybody because somebody told you don't look good that you would end up having sex. You don't have sex until you're married. That is not, Jesus Christ does not encourage that. That is not biblical. And I'm a born Christian, a born again Christian. I was married for 60 years. I can't believe you.
You don't know. You don't know. You haven't read your Bible. And you don't have to believe that I'm a preacher. It's not about my ego. It's not about my ego.
You
it's about the Word of God.
A pastor.
And
no pastor
you need to read your Bible.
Anything.
Well, No pastor that doesn't care about young people. I care about young people.
No pastor would be creative in their thinking. Sex. That's ridiculous.
I didn't say that. I said if a man comes to your door, Debbie, a man comes to pick you up, Debbie, for a date and says, nope, you don't look good to me, okay?
Shame on you.
By the end of the night, he wants to have sex with you.
I never heard such a thing.
You consider that, well, you may not have heard it. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist, and that's the ego of you. You think if you haven't heard of something, it doesn't exist.
How long have you been married?
Your ego, Debbie, is out of control. And I would suggest that you sublimate your ego to God and not say to people, well, if I haven't heard of it, then it doesn't exist. And you've been doing
that
your whole life, Debbie.
What a ridiculous statement you're making.
Because It's not blasphemy to talk bad about
you. I never heard of such a thing. And I tell you, I'm from California, and if I ever heard of your church, I can't believe it. There's somebody like you out there talking to young people. It's just
you need to read your Bible. You need to read your Bible, where it says very clearly. No, you need to read the Bible.
I'm going to pray for you because you need prayer.
No,
you left your profession, and you are not a preacher. You are not spreading the word of God.
I am a preacher.
You are not, and you are.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I am a preacher. And you are
not. No, you're
not.
You're not like any I ever heard, and I sure wouldn't want to.
Well, that may be a good thing. That may be a good thing.
You're not a preacher.
Yes, I am a preacher. I am a preacher, and I've been on television.
Well, I pity your wife.
I'm not married.
It's just ridiculous.
See, you don't know anything.
You said you've mentioned, so am I, widowed. I was married for 60 years.
Widowed?
And I never
I
had sex
widowed.
With anyone
but
my husband.
I think he ran out on you. I think he ran out.
No, he died.
He
died 2 years ago.
That's what he wants you to believe, but he ran out.
What?
I think this woman's husband ran out on her. Because he couldn't take it any longer.
Phil Hendry.
He couldn't take it any longer.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is a modern word, I think. And I know plenty of people that say boobies.
But just to give you a really easy way to start researching what's happening in your school.
Well, what is hurting us right now, economically, are statements, false statements.
It was summer, was wearing what I usually wear. I didn't feel like that was being disrespectful.
I heart boobies.
Famous Phil Hendry Show, and remember,
I heart boobies.
Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, and where truth is our bitch. That's right. That's right. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. This is the only show of its kind anywhere in the history of the world. We take you through the looking glass to the truth itself. The right arm of the Phil Hendry Show is our website, philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. Live streaming video of the show right now, as well as live streaming audio of the show, as well as archives, our news feed, and all of the other features, including podcasts that are delivered via iTunes or others, or right from our website, that you can enjoy our five-day video casts on demand. And as I mentioned, just thousands and thousands of hours of archived radio, the best radio show in the world. I say that with all due respect, but then a lot of people agree with it. 877-876-PHIL is our number here this evening as we continue with David Casanova from Casanova Ministries. And we're talking with him tonight about a controversial doctrine, I have to say, David, in many ways. I know that you're not the Pope and you're not you don't consider yourself Jesus, but aren't you sort of changing? And don't answer that question right away, because I've got a better question. But you can include an answer, but it seems as if you're changing doctrine a little bit. But let me just get to what I want to say here.
All right.
You said that sex with a woman that you don't want to sleep with is a holy thing. You mentioned that sex, if it is engaged in the name of God, is a healing thing, and a young man starts out a date with a young woman by being honest with her. If she doesn't look good, he should volunteer, "You don't look good tonight."
That is correct, yeah. And the reason why we started talking about that is because I'd had a question in our young men's ministry on our Saturday school. I had a question from a young man who said, Reverend David, I am expected, I think we're all expected to say to a young lady when we see her for the first time on a date, "You look nice tonight, you look nice tonight." Well, he was very, and he was very earnest and very honest in this question. I don't know if I'm being honest or not. I don't even know if I should tell a young lady that or not. I don't know if it makes her think that I am not very smart or that I just want one thing. You know, I said, look, the best thing to do is to volunteer that she doesn't look good. Don't tell her she looks good, because you're right. A lot of young women will just think you're saying something they hear all the time. But instead, volunteer that she doesn't look good. And I brought up the example of my wife. I told you, I told that lady I wasn't married. I wasn't married in my career. I am married, Phil.
And right. You're not. Your wife is Jennifer?
No, my wife is Charlene.
Oh, okay.
And my wife, when I first went out with her, the very first thing out of my mouth when I went to pick her up that night, and I'll never forget the night, was that this was going to be tough. I said, we're going to have a problem here. And she looked around. She said, what do you mean? I said, this is just, I said, the way you look. But I said, you're going to look better and better as the night goes on. She goes, oh, if you have more to drink? I said, no, not at all. No, I said, sober, through the, you know, grace of the Holy Spirit. And she said, you're Christian. I said, yes, I am. And I said, and you and I together tonight can overcome what has happened here. And that is, I've come to pick you up, and you don't look good at all. But I said, by the end of the evening, it's going to be okay. And so...
And you wound up marrying her.
That is correct, Bill. And we've been married now 16 years.
16 years.
16 years. And she works with me in the ministry. She's my best friend, and I love her very much. And we have two beautiful sons, and all of that is the result of me saying to her, you are going to be hard on my vision tonight. But by the end of that night, we were engaged in a very physical thing that we did, and I'm not going to go into it, but it was real physical. But she said, yeah, I'll be a Christian. So to me...
she said, yeah, I'll be a Christian.
No, she didn't say it like that. I said, do you accept Jesus Christ in your... And I made a joke because of something that I was doing, but she said, yes, I do, and we laughed about it, but she was very earnest in it.
Well, when you just said that, what you said right there...
I know. People misunderstand that, Phil.
No, that seemed so disrespectful.
I apologize. I shouldn't have brought that up, but it was...
It really did.
I understand that. I apologize.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. When you met your wife, you didn't meet her at, like, the Desert Gold Exchange or something, did you?
Desert Gold Exchange is one of your sponsors, right?
Yeah, I mean, those are guys that they deal in precious metals. But your wife sounds like a very precious girl to be with you.
She is a very precious girl. I could have met her at the Desert Gold Exchange, you know, as precious as she is. But no, I did not.
No, the Desert Gold Exchange deals in precious metals. But like I said, precious people... your wife sounds like one of them. 877-876-PHIL is our number here.
I take that as a compliment, Phil.
Well, it is a compliment to her. Let's go over to a phone call. Here is Anita in Boston. Yes. Anita, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Hi. First of all,
hi.
Why, if you're a preacher, what's your name, David?
My name is David Casanova. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
All okay. Right. Why would you insult an elderly widow who is telling you that her husband died? Why would you say he probably ran off? Why would you do that if you're a preacher and a man of God?
Because she was about ego. She was taking this, she was leaning on God and using God because she really felt she was the center of the truth.
So shouldn't you try to persuade her to see your point of view instead of insulting her?
I did. I showed her ego. I mirrored her ego back to her. And sometimes people need that.
Okay. And number two, you are a womanizer. I can tell that from the first second that I heard you. And you are ridiculous.
You are an embarrassment to anyone who's a Christian. Well,
go ahead.
And you're God. So you're God, too, I take it. Well, it's nice to meet you, God. I just talked to God last hour. His name was Debbie then. Now
really?
It's
wow. But
yes.
See, you know what? Can you let me talk, please?
See, I got you. I got
can you.
Can you
let me talk, please?
No, because everything you say is you call me a name. You don't really make an argument.
I haven't called you one
so,
name. Can I talk now?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. You said I'm a womanizer.
Okay, so just let
you call
me know.
A liar.
Well, it's a fact. I wasn't insulting you.
You call
that's,
me
that's
a...
the truth. Okay,
no,
so you just let me know
truth.
When I can talk.
Any
and
more...
stop interrupting me. Just let me know.
I will. I'll let you know. Now, Phil.
Okay, well, hurry it up.
Say to Anita,
will you hurry up, please?
No. See, all this woman can do is call me names, because that's what she does with men.
But the
she's
lady
got an
was
issue
telling
with
you
her
earlier.
Father. She's got, wait a minute. Could you? I thought you told me that I could talk. Yeah.
Okay. The lady earlier was
she's
telling
got a,
you.
She has an issue. She has an issue with her father.
Oh, come on.
Okay.
What
the
were
lady
you saying,
earlier,
Anita? Go ahead.
Thank you. The lady earlier.
Will you let Anita talk?
She lied. She lied. She said I could talk.
Okay, the lady earlier was telling you, shame on you, and saying, okay, can you just, please, seriously.
You lie.
And about the comments and the stuff that you were making, and then...
What did I say?
Phil here tells you that you're being disrespectful, and you apologize. That's why I can tell that you're a womanizer, because anything that the man tells you, that's okay, but if a woman tells you it, we're lies, we're calling you names, and I just don't understand...
Yes, you do understand, because your issues with men are at the very core of this. See,
you can insult me all you want.
I can't comment. Now I'm insulting you. No, it's truth. Remember, truth. It's not insult. It's truth. If you have an issue with a man, that's all right. That's okay. But don't blame David Casanova, because I said to my wife one day, you're hard on my vision. It's
do
my last name. It's
Casanova?
A family name. It's a family name, man.
All right, Anita, now you're getting ridiculous. Is there anything else you want to say? Is that it? All right. 877-876-PHIL. I take it that is your family name, right?
Yeah, it is my family name. And that woman there, boy, was she begging for it.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, I can tell a woman who, hates... I just...
So hates what?
She's all... She just didn't shut up. I do have one problem. God help me for this, Phil, and I hope Jesus will help me with it, too. I got a problem. I watch a lot of specials on Ted Bundy. I think it's a problem. I don't want to kill anyone, but I always, for some reason, I'll watch these specials on Ted Bundy, and I'll stand up, and I can give an example. All right. Do you hear what I did?
You're applauding?
I do. I applaud.
At the end of Ted Bundy specials.
Yes, I do. And I know it's wrong, and I know that I have to work that out. But that woman there that I just talked to, see, now that other woman who thought she was Jesus Christ walking on water because her husband died, and then another one, forgive me.
Do you want to take a couple of minutes?
I'd appreciate it, yeah.
All right, David. David Casanova with us, 877. That is his last name. It's an Italian last name. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with David Casanova and more on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Phil, I got to you, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, she. I don't let women get to me.
Well, that last lady got to you.
Well, I think she got to you, didn't she?
No, I mean, I didn't like her saying Casanova. Is that really your last name? But
yeah, see that. So she was bothering you.
She wasn't bothering me as much. You were getting really irate with her. But to say that you applaud Ted Bundy documentaries, you know.
I said there are times when I will watch one of these documentaries on one of the news channels. You mentioned Investigation Discovery, and I will see a documentary about a man who has been evil to women, evil. And I find myself almost unconsciously standing up at the end as the credits are rolling. Phil, let me put the phone down.
No, I know what you're going to do.
Hold on. Credits roll. Stand. And I don't know why I do that.
Well, you have some issues. And do you feel that it is right for you to be advising young people on their dating habits?
I think so, Phil, yeah.
On saying to a girl at the beginning of a date, you don't look good at all, but you're going to look better. And at the end of the evening, if they're having sex together, that this is a some kind of in the name of God thing?
Well, Phil, do you think that when a man has sex with a woman that he truly is not attracted to, don't you think that is a sacrificial act?
No, I don't.
You don't?
No, I do not. No.
Well, you and I have a difference of opinion, but I feel that it is very much a selfless act.
And well, what about a woman that has sex with a man she doesn't find attractive?
That's different because women don't care about a man's looks. They care more about his personality. So a man can look like a, you know, like the thing from the lagoon or however they put it. And a woman can fall. A woman can fall in love with a man who's got one eye. But a man's not going to fall in love with a woman that looks like the thing from the lagoon. And that's the thing you need to learn. That's what Jesus tells us. In the gospel, Jesus will talk about a man and a woman and how the two of them are from a different, there's a whole other paradigm, you know. And if she looks like she's the thing from the lagoon, that's not good. If he does. So a man can have sex with a woman, and if he can't stand it, it is very much done in the grace of the Holy Spirit.
877-876-PHIL. Yeah, but that goes against what you said earlier, that they're going to become closer and tighter as the evening goes on. In Chico, California, here is Rebecca listening to us on KZAP. Hello, Rebecca. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted you to know I am a Christian woman, and if a man came to pick me up for a date and told me I didn't look good, that would be the end of the date right there. There is no need to spend time with someone that's that superficial and lacking manners. That's very bad manners. It's inconsiderate and it's unkind. Why would the woman want to go out with the guy after he said that? I don't think most women would.
Well, because he's had the courage to say to her, it doesn't matter, I want to go out with you anyway, because I want to put you at ease, that your looks don't, you know, you don't look good, but that doesn't make any difference to me.
Well, if it didn't, he wouldn't have to bring it up, would he? If he's that shallow, he doesn't even want to get to know her. He notices that she doesn't look quite good enough for him.
That's a good point.
Well, no. It's on the surface, it looks like a good point. But let me say this. He says it so that they can break that traditional mold that young men and young women are forced into when they're dating. So now that he's got it out there that she's going to be tough to look at, the rest of the night becomes an adventure in, you know, Christian renewal.
Yes, and then I think she should take the time to inform him how good-looking he is and how it's, you know, please keep the lights down low because I can't stand to look at you. You're so ugly. I think she should just tell him what she thinks of his looks, too, then.
Well, that wouldn't
and
be true.
And then it wouldn't be reacting because his ego would be so hurt.
No, that wouldn't be true, though, because she's just saying that to get back at him.
Oh, no. There's ugly men.
See?
There's a lot of ugly men out there.
Yeah, but he might not be ugly. He might be good-looking.
Well, when I say ugly men, I'm talking about what's inside. What's inside their head and what's inside their mind, like you, for instance.
Well, ma'am,
if women are so desperate, they're going to go out with somebody that says they're not good-looking? That's crazy.
No, ma'am, that's not what I'm talking about, ma'am. What I'm talking about I went out with my wife, and the first thing I said to her was she was going to be hard on my vision.
Well, maybe she has low self-esteem.
No, I don't think so.
Sounds like it's
me. We've been married 16 years. Well, if you're going to... Are you going to insult a woman that's not even here to defend herself?
Well,
I mean, you're saying what you're saying here, Dave. You're saying that she, when you went out with her, you said to her, you're going to be hard on my vision for the rest of the night.
That's what I said, yeah. Well, this lady is saying that she's got no self-esteem.
She's drawing a conclusion based upon what you have said to us.
The fact that she went out with her, you know. She doesn't like herself.
Well, see, Rebecca is like that other lady I talked to.
Oh, no, now you're judging and putting me in a category. Now, you don't like it when people do that to you.
What? I never said I didn't like it when people do it to me.
Yeah, when that one lady called you a womanizer, you didn't like that, did you?
Well, it's not true. It's not. I'm not a womanizer. Have I hit on you? Have I hit on you? I mean, if I wanted to turn on the charm, I would.
I wouldn't have anything to do with somebody as twisted as you are.
If I wanted to turn on the charm, I would, but I'm not going to do that because I'm a married man.
It wouldn't work.
Maybe you can come out like a cow
to turn on the charm?
Well, do you?
Is that foreplay?
Well, I don't know. Do you? What do you look like?
I've never been told that.
Wait a minute. This is not what I call a Christian conversation we're having here.
Well, I think it is, Phil, because... See, the way she laughs right there, remember what I told you about seeing an Edwin Kemper documentary?
What are you saying?
I want to ask this lady. Do you know who Edwin Kemper is? Do you know who Edwin Kemper is?
I don't think so.
All right. Can I give you a hint?
Yeah.
Two heads in the trunk of his car.
Okay, he's a serial killer. He's a serial killer, Rebecca.
Right.
Okay.
And, Rebecca, the way you're talking to me, when I see an Edwin Kemper documentary on TV, this is what I do at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
Okay?
That's weird, man.
She just laughed.
Of course she's laughing. Of course she's laughing.
I think that what we have tonight is I tried to lay some Christian truth on people, and I got three women in a row that laughed at me. And
I just think it's really unbelievable that what
you're
saying.
What's unbelievable about me wanting to...
Oh, your whole crock that you thought up. You're not a minister.
I'm a Christian minister who is attempting to rip away... Forget it.
He hung up. He hung up, Rebecca. All right.
I just want to say one thing.
I thought you hung up.
No, I haven't. But is Rebecca there?
Yes, I'm there.
Is she there?
Yeah.
You know that there's a shuttle leaving in 5 minutes for the new wing on the Hell Sheraton?
On the what?
On the Hell Sheraton.
Oh.
Will you get out of here? Thanks very much, ma'am. 877-876-PHIL. The guy sees an Edwin Kemper documentary and goes, we'll be back on the world. Thank you very much to David Casanova, Reverend Casanova. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Hey, Phil, here.
Phil Henry.
Yeah.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, and, okay, I got Reverend Casanova. Yes, sir?
Phil, you had the number on that Desert Gold Exchange.
Yeah, were you thinking of trading your wife in there?
No, I'm not, Phil. I recognize I've got a very good wife, and I recognize she is a precious person. But I'm looking to take a look at some precious metals and some gold.
All right, it's
855-2-4343. And that's called a desert.
That's a Desert Gold Exchange.
Yeah, they have a website, right?
They got a website, dgegold.com.
Because I can tell you that what that woman did, I got to do something.
So many weird things. You know, the guy that took the Discovery Channel hostage, this guy's got a manifesto, too. I just wanted to say one thing about these manifestos, that if you're a nut and you want to take somebody hostage or you want to do something because you want to explain to the world how we got it all wrong and you're a genius, do yourself a big favor, man. Make it really short. Make it a slogan. Don't make it a big three-page, boring, insane, psychotic, rambling tome. Turn it into something that, you know, we can use, man, like a real quick slogan, like babies must die. If that's what this guy was talking about.
He thought that babies ought to die.
No, I didn't think babies ought to die. I just didn't think people should be born.
That's what I was hearing. This man, James J. Lee, shot and killed by police at the end of a tense hostage standoff. Now, this manifesto, which I took a look at, it's the same garbage like that Joe Stack.
Joe Stack is... You shouldn't say that.
Oh, get out of here. Joe Stack was a maniac, too. You want to know something, man? He wasn't a maniac. I remember talking to Dr. Stone about that guy, Joe Stack, and he said to me, you know, Joe Stack had legitimate concerns. He had legitimate beefs. He had a legitimate gripe. Okay, so you got a legitimate gripe. You know, the world is not a place that is necessarily a fair place. Everybody's getting screwed at one time or another. Somebody is taking it in the shorts. At one time or another. Would you agree?
Yeah. But what, are you supposed to bend over and take it?
No, you're not supposed to bend over and take it, but, my friend, sooner or later, you either accept things as they are or you change them for the better, but killing yourself and another innocent human being in the process is not changing anything. All that is being mad. I'm just going to be mad. And we've had it with people that are just angry and things ain't changing fast enough for their asses, so they want to take somebody hostage or they want to go and kill somebody. Well, guess what, man? That ain't the way it works. You're going to die. Nobody is going to care what you got to say once you go down that road. No one. I can't even find this guy's jackass treatise. Not that it, you know, is going to be anything that's coherent. That's why I say, and I'll never forget when Joe Stack flew his plane into that building. Oh, my God, they had a Facebook page for this guy, and some of the stupidest human beings that you ever in your life could imagine were weighing in on that page. Dumb as dirt. And so all of those people dissipated because Joe Stack, it turns out, no one gives a crap. You want to know why? Because Joe Stack couldn't write a manifesto any better than he could probably fly an airplane.
Well, he flew it on purpose in a building.
We don't know that.
No, he did, okay.
No, what if it was an accident or something?
You're nuts.
He's kidding. So he writes this thing that nobody wants to read. No one can make head nor tail out of it. No one cares. Yeah, he made a lot of sense. He's going to make a lot of sense to anybody that doesn't like paying taxes. He's going to make a lot of sense to anybody that just, you know, that just doesn't like a lot of stuff. Day in and day out, they don't like stuff. Every day, morning, noon, and night, there's something they don't like, you know. Sure, yeah, he makes a lot of sense. Him and three other nuts, they all understand each other. But anyway, if you want to do that, don't go the Joe Stack route or this James Lee route, man. You gotta, or even the Adolf Hitler route, because I was saying during our pre-show, Mein Kampf, that was another manifesto. And he wrote that in prison. See, Hitler, he was far, far cooler. And he was far more, you know, the times were right for good old Adolf. Things couldn't have been more perfect for him, man. He was sitting there in prison. He was watching Germany go to hell in a handcart. And he was thinking, as soon as I get out, oh, yeah, you know. By the way, remember that thing about him liking Mercedes?
Yeah.
I was reading a thing. He did. He had 10. He had 10 Mercedes. He loved that car. And he did ask Mercedes if they would give him the advance of a certain stipend of cash. In other words, defray the payments on a Mercedes. He loved a Mercedes so much, and he wanted to have a Mercedes to tour Germany after he got out of prison and begin his campaigning. And Mercedes said yes. And so from that day forward, Mercedes-Benz and Uncle Adolf, man, they were tight.
Oh, they were best friends, huh?
Oh, yeah, real good friends, real tight. And he wound up, Hitler wound up owning 10, 12 of these things. I say things. Obviously, he knew a good car when he saw one. And so that was just, that's a side thing. But here's the thing. You write a manifesto, and people go, wow, this really makes a lot of sense. Does it really make a lot of sense, really? You know, Mein Kampf, it sold more copies than the Bible. Everybody knows this. It's a famous story that Mein Kampf sold more copies than the Bible in Germany. All right. Now, if you read that thing today, I'm telling you, if you got out of the third grade, it stuns you how stupid it is. I mean, from the beginning to the end, it's nothing but an imbecile talking nonsense. From beginning to end, it's an idiot talking nonsense. Everything from his understanding of history, to his understanding of culture, to his understanding of the human race, to his own understanding of warfare and which countries were ripe for the pickings. Now you flash forward to Joe Stack. There's another jackass. Or this guy Lee, another jackass. You're far better off doing something that Adolf did master, and that's the slogan, man, you know. Or,
didn't he say one day at a time?
Are you nuts or something, man? Alcoholics Anonymous.
What do you mean, one day at a time?
Who said that?
Alcoholics Anonymous.
No, that was Hitler.
No, it wasn't Hitler.
Man, you must be dumber than you look, man. Have you ever known about Alcoholic Anonymous?
What?
Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
What do you mean Hitler came up with One Day at a Time?
But what did he do? What was the one that he did say? I know, keep it simple. Keep it simple, stupid.
That's AA, man.
Yeah, that's AA. What are you getting AA, man?
Oh, I was thinking SA.
Get out of here with the SA. Didn't Hitler say One Day at a Time?
Probably did.
Maybe. I heard he made one hell of a good salsa, but that's not what we're talking about here. So anyway, so if you're going to make a manifesto, if you're going to tell people how everything, and you know that you're going to, look at this. I just launched the camera again. Can you believe this? Hold on. I know I'm on the air, folks. I apologize, but my camera, this is the funniest thing that's been going on here for the last, since the show started, really. And that is that I get doing the show so physically that my video camera for the show, for the live streaming video, falls off of the stand that it's on. And this is the second time.
That's because you're belting the table with everything.
I did. I hit the table with some papers because you're pissing me off. I apologize, folks. Second time that's done. That will not happen again. All right, but in any event, you know what I'm talking about. So if you're going to come up with a manifesto about anything, make sure that's readable. And the best thing to do is keep it to a phrase of no more than 6 or 7 words.
Yeah, but don't say One Day at a Time.
Yeah, don't use One Day at a Time because Hitler came up with that one. Just ask Bud.
I didn't know.
Man, that you will forever be known as that, how dumb you is.
How dumb I is, yeah. God, man.
How dumb you are, but you are. All right, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. So that's the story there. By the way, another story that we wanted to tell you about that is... I wouldn't put this in the Adolf Hitler or the Joe Stack or the James Lee category, but Ed Schultz said he could easily get a rally as big as Glenn Beck's. So I...
Boy, that's nuts.
Yeah, that's... So we're going to talk about that, because if Glenn Beck, if Ed Schultz can get a rally as big as Glenn Beck's, then I ought to be able to get a rally as big as Ed Schultz's.
Well, going to be probably about 10 people.
Yeah, like I said, I could get a rally as big as his. All right, 877-876-PHIL. So Glenn Beck takes on, or rather Ed Schultz takes on Glenn Beck. We'll tell you what they're belching about or bickering. Plus, senior chat with Harvey Weierman still to come later on tonight as Harvey discusses his new book, When Will the Lying Ever End? It's the world-famous, not-to-be-missed, Phil Henry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry.
Nothing here, man. There's nothing here, man. You know, I'm asked in the studio, I says, well, does it say how this Lee guy was killed? Oh, yeah, the story says it all. No, and I even before I read the story, I said to them, I know for a fact that the story won't have that information because the news, as it is reported these days, is so lousy. There's nothing in this story that says how this guy was taken by police. Now, I've got audio, but if for whatever reason I was up against it, I couldn't play the audio. Once again, I've got another story here that's got nothing in it about how anything happened. The same thing is true with that Brewer debate with that other guy. Oh, yeah, she made crap out of the first few minutes. Really? What happened? Oh, well, we're not going to tell you in the news story. Well, how the hell am I going to find out then, man? So there's nothing in this worthless news story that I got sent that tells me anything about this guy. So I have to rely now on audio. And I, by the way, I'll give you money that the audio isn't complete either. This is all I'm telling you guys. Well, the reason why I'm saying this is because of the following thing. News doesn't get reported anymore. They tell you something really sexy in the headline. You go to read it. They don't give you any particulars. They just make sure that you keep reading. Hey, this discovery all clear. The guy was shot. The cops did the do. And you read this thing, and all you do is at the end of it, curse the Washington Post and the producer that sent it to you. Because once again, you got sent a story with nothing in it. All right, so anyway, without the benefit of knowing what happened, because this story won't tell me, Montgomery County Police Chief J. Thomas Manger spoke with ABC News, and they're always a font of information, about the emotional state of James J. Lee during the standoff.
We had been negotiating with this man for the better part of 4 hours, and I would characterize his demeanor as angry and wide range of emotions, but we'd gotten to the point where we were talking to him. Our goal was primarily to get the hostages out safe. If we were able to accomplish that, we would then move toward having him surrender peacefully.
Chief Manger says they always knew what was happening between Lee and the hostages.
We were watching the entire group, he and the hostages, from a security camera, and we could see them. We had SWAT officers right on the other side of the wall from where he was. Now, he didn't know that, but there was an immediate action team. The folks who were watching the camera said that they thought the hostages were beginning to move. And at one point, where the suspect's talking to us on the phone, now his attention is diverted to the hostages.
All right, now Chief Manger explains why the officers entered the room and wound up killing Lee.
He shouts something, and then the officers hear a pop. Now, whether this was him firing off a round out of his weapon or whether it was him trying to detonate the device on his body, we don't know yet. But at that instant, my folks came around the corner, confronted him. Now, at this point, the hostages are running. We confront him. He turns toward my officers. The gun is out, and that's when they shoot him.
You know, these cops, they have no idea what's going to happen. They don't know if that guy pulls some kind of a detonation cord or whatever triggers that device, that he doesn't go up, and there's a whole bunch of dead cops on top of that. I remember an incident in Miami when I was in Miami back in the 90s. Two police officers, a hostage situation. They entered the home, and they didn't quite know that it was hostage just yet. All they knew is that they had a very irate man in a house, and there was a woman and a young girl in there. And as they entered the house, and they came around the corner, the girl bolted and got away from this man who I think was her father, and they saw a man standing there with a gasoline bomb. And boom, these two Miami cops, the miracle is that these men survived. They were badly scarred, and I don't believe that the two men remained on the force. But here's two guys answering a call, a domestic violence call. They walk around the corner, and here is some freaking lunatic with a gasoline bomb, a petrol bomb, kills himself and almost kills two cops. It was a miracle the kid and the wife got out of there. So you really don't know. I mean, you can be as trained as all hell, man. You can have every kind of training that's available to a police officer, but there's no protection, none whatsoever. And they got around the corner and they wasted that guy. Good riddance to bad rubbish. But if the guy had somehow detonated that bomb, you got some dead cops and maybe dead hostages, even though they had, by his description, they'd already taken off running. So, it's a thankless job, but I personally thanked them. I don't know if it'll do any good.
Yeah, well, they can't hear you. They're in Washington.
I know, but I'm just... Well, we're in Washington.
Yeah, we're in Washington.
So thank you, Washington Police, Montgomery County Police.
They still might not hear you because they may not listen to the show.
Thank you very much, bud. That's great. Thanks. That's good thinking.
Yeah, really good thinking, man.
Well...
877. Let me just say hi to President Obama tonight. Oh, you know what? He may not be listening to the show.
Yeah, he's probably not listening. He's probably sawing logs.
Sawing logs, huh? Well, I guess he is. It's 3 a.m. All right, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. they're probably not listening. Well, you're right, man. So, you know, all's well that doesn't end well. All right, now, moving on to, because I promised you tonight, we're talking about guys that are nuts. Ed Schultz. I'm kidding, Ed. You're probably a good guy. I don't know much about Ed. I told you, I saw him at a radio thing back east back in 97. Anyway, Ed Schultz said, I could easily throw a rally as big as Glenn Beck's. Glenn Beck actually had a really good line that he threw back at at Ed Schultz on this. Glenn Beck's Restoring Honor rally in D.C. on Saturday appears to have thrown a lot of people into a tizzy of speculation over what it all means. By some appearances, it also stirred a bit of an ego battle among fellow cable news anchors. On his radio show Tuesday, Ed Schultz says what Glenn Beck did is no big deal. He can organize his own rally, and he could be even more successful.
I could get every union head in this country.
You could give every...
Organize every progressive group in this country. The main bloggers. This could be the Ed March. Folks, 300,000 people on the heels of 6 months promotion, that ain't no big shakes. 6 months promotion, NBC News says 300,000 people. I bet I could do that. I bet I could do that with this radio show and my TV show in 6 months production, 6 months promotion. If I had the budget, I could equal...
If I had the budget!
I know I could.
If I had the budget...
I could do more than 300,000. It ain't a big deal.
In other words, you ain't going to do it because you just threw that little caveat in, but I don't have the budget, so you just put it off on the network, huh? Anyway, here is Glenn Beck's rejoinder.
By the way, the thing on Ed Schultz said that he,
yes,
he could draw 300,000 people at the mall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Ed, just a quick personal note. First, why don't you try to draw 300,000 you know, in the demo.
And in the, just to turn on their TV.
And then you get back to us in the mall. That's good.
On a related note, MSNBC's Bill Press and Lawrence O'Donnell also downplay the attendance of the Beck rally, saying that it's easy to get a bunch of people to the area.
You know, I have to tell you, I'll give them credit for getting a big crowd. Look, they pumped this. They pimped this on Fox News for about a year. There were more than 80,000 people there, I believe. I don't know. I'm the counter. I'd give them 100,000 anyhow. And I think it shows the power of Fox News to attract that many people. Look,
oh, shut up. You kicked ass. Quit sounding like a bunch of old ladies.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What is hurting us right now, economically, our statements, fast
statements. It's sad. We just met with these people.
We were watching the entire group.
By the way, the thing on Ed Schultz
it's
said...
It's 2 inches long.
You would have been screwed.
What is this assault?
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And remember...
Woody, this is a song!
Now, anyway, go to our website, philhendryshow.com, which is the right arm of the Phil Hendry Show, the greatest archive available of any radio show anywhere. Groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show. Also, a live-streaming video of our show every night. And for the second time tonight, because I was beating on the table... If you'll pardon the expression, the camera fell off the stand and went boop. Looked like it would look. What were you saying, bud?
Yeah, it looked like the end of Blair Witch Project when a girl got her head chopped off and everything.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember the girl getting her head chopped off. I remember the camera falling.
Yeah, but her head rolled by.
Her head rolled by?
Man, I don't remember the head because remember when you said that.
Yeah, the head rolled. If you see the Blair Witch Project, the camera will go, and then a head, I'm pretty sure the head rolls by. Just roll, you'll see like her, she's like smiling. And then,
will you shut up, she's smiling.
I swear to God.
Hey, Rance, do you remember her head getting chopped off at the end of, because he was bringing that up to me. At the end of Blair Witch Project, her head, it doesn't get chopped off, she just collapses, he says. Yeah, so.
He said it got, that's why I said it.
He says you hear a thump when she collapses.
Yeah, because the guy probably killed her or something.
Yeah, that's what I thought, man. She comes around the corner. She sees the guy stand. What the hell are we talking about anyway?
Talk about the head rolling, the head get it chopped off.
No, I was talking about my camera, but the head get it chopped off. I'm talking about the camera fell off the stand, and it looked like Blair Witch Project.
No, because there's no head.
Well, you forget about the head. There doesn't have to be a head. Despite what Ed Schultz said he'd do to all the union heads.
I heard that too, man.
Hey, Ed, you got to watch that, dude. Because I distinctly heard, you know, Ed Schultz say that in order for he could get 300,000 people there in the Capitol Mall, if he just passed around a little, you know, love, if you'll pardon the intent of that. Here it is.
I could get every union head in this country.
I don't know the way he said that. All right. 877. Oh, he said I could get every.
Yeah.
All right. 877-876-PHIL. Now, this one goes in the books for, I don't know, if I was this guy, I'd probably, see, here's the thing. If you survived a 39-story fall from a building in New York City, okay?
Yeah, man, I would think that God wanted me to live.
That's what I would think. But then there's the other side of that, which is, you know.
If at first you don't succeed.
Yeah, if at first you don't succeed, try again.
What are you talking about, man? That's bad.
No, if the guy jumped. Here's a guy, he fell 39 stories from a building in New York City. He crashed on top of a Dodge Charger, and he has lived to tell the tale. This is from a Daily News bulletin in the New York Daily News. A young man fell 39 stories Tuesday from a West Side high-rise in New York. He crashed through the windshield of a sports car, and he has lived to tell about it. The first words out of his mouth after he landed were, "My leg, my leg." Thomas McGill screamed after an apparent suicide attempt ended with his landing in the red 2008 Dodge Charger. And the guy whose car he wrecked is praying for him. He reached into his car and pulled a rosary out, and he said, this is what saved that guy. This man, who's the owner, is a gentleman by the name of Guy McCormick of New Jersey. He owns the Charger, which is now destroyed. And he was doing construction work across the street. And he went in, and he reached, and he got his rosary, and he said, this is how the guy survived right here. Here's what saved him. Meanwhile, someone said, guy, your car is... no, but look what's it, your car. Oh, yeah, that's right. Anyway, McGill was in critical condition Tuesday night. Here's why he was in critical condition. He has two broken legs, but you can well imagine having fallen 39 stories. They're not just broken. If you see the guy, he is sitting inside the car. If you see the picture, he's sitting and he's looking up at rescue workers. And I said to Jason, I said, hey, look, the guy's sitting in the car. Jason goes, well, it looks like he's sitting. He's actually sitting on legs that are just, you know, pretzeled up, man.
Yeah, but no, his legs are all like made out of, what do you call it, like just like sawdust or something.
What do you mean? They don't work?
What do you mean they don't work?
No, but what I mean is his legs are... Is he standing up there?
No, he's not standing up, bud. His legs are just busted all to hell. So really, it's just him sitting on the trunk of his body with these legs all mangled. I don't know, man. In other words, and the latest word we got is that the guy was in surgery. And so the doctors are looking to repair the legs. I don't think it's a matter of them being amputated or anything. According to a witness, Andrew Petricelli, the man came down, and I'm quoting this witness, he came down feet first at like 100 miles an hour. Mr. Petricelli is a maintenance worker across the street from where Mr. McGill jumped. That's a miracle if I ever seen one. He should be a goner. It was like that movie Unbreakable. That was this guy, Unbreakable. Don't you love New Yorkers?
Good for a day. Colorful quote.
Now, he believes McGill survived on the wings of divine intervention. That would be Guy McCormick, who reached in and got out the rosary. McGill's father, Thomas, sent a text message to friends saying, please pray for my son. He's stable now. We can only hope he'll be okay. The father said after doctors briefed him on his son's surgery at St. Luke's Hospital. McGill, whose family lives on Staten Island, was once listed as a resident of the Manhattan building, West End Towers at 75 West End Avenue. Neighbor City studied music at Fordham. Mr. McGill had a Facebook page. On it, he wrote, I hate my life. Under the category bio, he posted, I'm over it. And he listed being mean and making fun of people as interests. Police sources said investigators believe he jumped from a 39th floor window or balcony at 10:45 in the morning. He landed in the car's back seat and trunk area, twisted like a pretzel.
What does that mean?
It's all like a pretzel, man.
I bet you his legs were like, I bet you when they found him, his, like, 1 foot was near his ear, and
get out of here.
I swear, man. I bet you when they say, I bet you he was sitting there, and it was like something out of a Monty Python sketch.
Yeah, man, he probably had, like, a 1 foot in his pocket and another foot, like, on the back windshield or something like that.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious, man. How many times do I got to tell you? The guy's legs were busted really bad. Really bad. So the cat is sitting there. He probably looked like that one of those guys, like you were saying, in a Monty Python sketch, you know, where the feet are up near the top of his head or something. I mean, it must have been bad news. Mr. Petrocelli, who witnessed this, said the man, this guy McGill, had his hands up in the air, flailing. Just when he's about to land, there was a boom and glass flying all over. Petrocelli surmised the car saved his life. He landed in there like a stuntman. It was amazing. McGill hit so hard that his royal blue Keds sneakers were knocked off his feet and one landed on the windshield of a car parked behind the Dodge. According to Francine DiNardo, a neighbor of the McGills on Staten Island, I'm shocked that he did that. He's an amazing kid. He seems so happy. He seems so joyful. While surviving a fall of 39 stories would be miraculous in any book, it's not unheard of in the city of New York. Window washer Alcides Marino survived a 43-story accidental fall on December 7, 2008 from an east side skyscraper. I seem to remember that, but I'm telling you, man, that's goofy. A guy going 39 stories. And there was another story about a baby that fell off a bridge 150 feet below.
Yeah, you were telling about how that baby got thrown off the bridge by the lady when it cried, you know.
Yeah, we were goofing around. We said that every time a baby cries, the instinct of the mother is to throw it. And she just happened to be on a bridge 150 feet above a riverbed. But the fact is, this woman dropped this. Obviously, she was trying to kill this infant. And I think she was trying to kill herself, too. I can't remember. She threw this child off this bridge onto a dry riverbed. 150 feet. And the kid was okay.
Bullcrap.
I swear to God, man.
How's that possible?
It might have been the blanket that the kid was wrapped in.
Yeah, I think the kid had like a blanket and everything all wrapped on around his head and everything.
Because the kid was fine.
The kid didn't even have a headache?
What do you mean a headache?
You said there's nothing wrong.
I don't know if it had a headache. Maybe it had a headache.
Did it want an aspirin?
It's a baby, man.
It's a baby.
See, you don't know, though.
I don't. Maybe it had a headache. But it's fine, and it lived, and it wasn't injured, so 877-8, it's a nutty thing. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're coming back more on the cringeworthy debate opening of Jan Brewer. You know what? I'm not going to read that story, man. It's not even news. They can't even tell me that it's news. An anti-bullying program pushes the gay agenda according to a Christian group. We'll be back. Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
So, anyway, now on to gay news. Well, we ain't had any in a while. And the gay, you know, the gay. Boy, the gay. You gay people. Anyway, I know, it's like an uphill battle. And I don't get it either. I got no problem with it. I hope that doesn't alienate anybody.
No, I don't like it. I don't think gay is right.
Well, I don't care about you, bud. You're here. You serve here at the pleasure of me.
What's that mean?
Just like they say, you know, the Attorney General serves at the pleasure of the President.
That sounds gay.
Yeah, well, it would to you. I don't care if you don't like gay. You don't like gay people?
Yeah, I don't like gay people. I just don't think gays should be in charge of anything.
In charge of anything? What the hell are you talking about, man? You know, you don't like black people. You got a black girlfriend.
Yeah. And I didn't say that. And I don't not like black people no more. I didn't used to like black people, but I like them better now.
Oh, I see. Because you got to know Vivian's family and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So maybe if you got to know some gay people.
No, thank you.
Don't worry about it, bud. You know. They ain't all looking to, you know, have you be their wife.
I would be the wife anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry, the husband.
Dad, I'm not even interested in that.
Man, why don't you shut up, man? The more you talk, the deeper you get yourself in.
No kidding. Gay rights groups push for anti-bullying legislation and school programs in an effort isn't... Oh, here it is. Gay rights groups push for anti-bullying legislation and school programs is an effort to promote homosexuality to kids, according to Focus on the Family, a conservative Christian activist organization. The accusation has underscored the conflicting attitudes among some politicians and parents who have lent their support to these policies after a string of deadly bullying episodes across the country. Now, you know, one of the mistakes probably, this is a bullying, an anti-bullying campaign, and I get it. Schools should be at the front of this, every school. Why gay rights groups, or any group for that matter, any group, has to weigh in on this, I don't understand. If there's bullying going on, then the schools need to stop it. Do you understand? Now, this is not anything that is, I think, that difficult, because I know the teachers have got a tough time in the classrooms. But the kids are on the campus there. The teachers are right there. The teachers intercede all the time to stop kids from doing destructive things, and they can get more active when it comes to the bullying of other kids. However, we do have these groups. One of them is Focus on the Family. There's gay rights groups. And now Focus on the Family decides to make it an issue that these guys are gay. Never mind the fact that maybe they just don't want kids to be bullied. Focus on the Family thinks they're going to push some gay agenda, some queer agenda. Oh, you know, anti-bullying, are you trying to turn my kid into a queer? No, we want your kid to be a nice Christian bully. The same groups, it says, lobby for gays and other minority groups to be specifically mentioned in anti-bullying legislation and try to depict Christians opposed to such treatment as bigots. Well, you are. But, you know, I know that you guys have been trying to spin it that you are the victims of bigotry. And you almost got away with it. You almost got away with it. But no one's buying it. That's why Meg Whitman may get elected governor of the state of California because her opponent, Jerry Brown, he don't bring up too many good memories in the minds of a lot of Californians, okay? And I almost was willing to vote for Meg Whitman until I heard her stand on the gay marriage issue. Now, you know, you can think what you want. I don't give a sweet you-know-what. But the fact of the matter is, it is, in the minds of some politicians, a campaign killer to be in favor of anything having to do with gay rights. It'll just commit, it'll murder you, right? Fiorona got around it. She's running for Senate. She got around it by saying, the people of the state have spoken. Now, that's very convenient because she knows most people are too stupid to understand what a constitutional issue is. So she just gets around it by saying, the people of the state have spoken. They don't want them queers getting married, see? Now, Boxer and the others, they say whatever the hell it is that you would expect liberals to say, which is that they're in favor of gay marriage. I happen to be in favor of it, too. I wouldn't exactly call myself a fan of Barbara Boxer's, but I digress. And then finally, of course, you know what Jerry Brown's issue is. It's constitutional. He feels that gay marriage is protected under the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution, which I happen to agree with. Then you have Meg Whitman. And Meg Whitman, not to alienate her true Republican base, whatever that is, and however they came to the conclusion that marriage among gay people is wrong, I don't know how conservatives turned away from the oft-spoken sentiments of Barry Goldwater, who was the founder of the modern conservative movement, and now they mock him, now they make fun of him, now they say that he was senile, these ridiculously stupid people. They mock a guy like Barry Goldwater. I take Barry Goldwater over every single one of these jackasses that are talking today. Every one of these conservatives today, I'd throw them out of an airplane at 30,000 feet and take Barry Goldwater over all of them. In any event, they're all opposed to gay marriage. So Meg Whitman knows that in order to keep all those people happy, she's got to come out against it. That may not hurt her. And frankly, she may, like I said, she may still win this election, but she lost my vote, see? And I can be very conservative in a lot of areas, fiscally or otherwise. I'm not when it comes to human rights. I'm just not. And if I got a governor that is that gutless. Let me put it that way, because that's what I think that is. I don't think Whitman's stupid. I think she understands it's probably a constitutional issue, but I think she's gutless. And I don't know about the rest of you guys, and I mean this. I'm getting tired of gutless politicians. Aren't you? Aren't you getting tired of gutless politicians just saying whatever it is that people want you to hear, you know, they think people want to hear? Because that's what we've had for a long time in Washington. We've had the most gutless pack of people. Both sides, Republicans and Democrats. I mean, I wouldn't give you 5 cents for any of them. Gutless wonders, every last one of them. Not a one of them standing on any kind of principle. And if they do, they're like real dumb. So anyway, Whitman, she says, no, okay, fine. That's where that's at. It cost her Phil Henry's vote. It's not a big deal. I don't know how many other people there are like me who were going to vote for Whitman until she opened her big fat trap about that. And maybe I shouldn't talk this way, you know, because Maria has done a lot of Maria's worked with her campaign, but, you know, that's Maria. That's her thing. But she's done a lot of work with Meg Whitman's campaign. But me, you know, maybe I had to tell her that. Say, hey, you should pass the word to Meg that she lost my vote because of her stand. She'd probably say, and I just talked to Meg, yeah? She asked who you were again? Okay. So what parents need to be aware of is there are activist groups who want to promote homosexuality to kids because they realize if they can capture hearts and minds of our children at the earliest stages, they will have all practical purposes won the clash of queers. The clash of queers. Which means the gays that don't even know your kids, who are in the school teaching them to resist bullying, those gays have more influence over your kids than you do, the actual parents, the people that live with them, the people that love them, the people that look out for them every day, that feed them, that clothe them, that send them to school. The gay, however, with his weird, miraculous, and crazy influence, is able to talk to those kids for a few minutes during the week, and suddenly they want to go queer. Because it's such an attractive lifestyle. You get beat up coming out of bars, right? You're not allowed half of the rights that other people have, right? You got to live in certain parts of town because, God forbid, you live anywhere away from the gay community. You're probably liable to get your ass beat for that. It's fantastic. You can ask Matthew Shepard. Oh, I'm sorry, he's dead. So, you know, the parents have got no influence over these kids at all. These gays that are coming into the school, they're the ones. Good God.
You know, you make a very good argument, but still, to say that a gay can be on a school campus.
You know what, bud? Nobody's saying gays are going to be on a school campus, and if they were, they have a right to be on a school campus.
Not to tell people to be gay.
They're not telling people to be gay. They're telling people not to bully people.
Man, take it easy, man. Talk about it in the office.
We'll talk about it in my office, okay?
I'm just saying, if I felt bad, I wouldn't go in.
Talk about it in my office.
My arm still feels good. Got a left-handed hitter. I can strike this guy out.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I don't know what he's saying. I don't give a... And this is Senior... This is Senior Chad. Welcome. Harvey Warman here. And we're going to do the Senior... I got to stop for a minute. What was he saying? I'll ask him. Don't worry about it. Ask him, because I can't... When that stupid SOB starts talking to me and the music's playing, I can't hear it. I can't hear what he's saying. All right, well, that's neither here nor there. Welcome to Senior Chat. I'm Harvey Wireman, and tonight we're going to... excuse me. We're going to talk about a book that I've written that's it'll be... When I finish writing... Well, I have written it. It'll be coming out... It's coming out when I write it. What I'm saying is I've started writing it, and it'll be coming out after I write it. I don't know if I've written it yet or not. Can you tell me? I would ask Bill Putnam. Do you know if I've written it?
I think so, yeah.
You'd think so. Do I know you, by the way?
Yeah, we met just before you were doing the show.
Yes, but are you in my life in any other way?
Well, no, but...
I don't know who you are. Anyway, so I've written the book?
No, you haven't. You haven't even written the book yet. After you write the book, then it'll go on sale.
Oh, okay. After I write the book, then it'll go on sale, according to Bill Putnam. The book is called When Will the Lies End? And it basically is about the golden years and how the golden years aren't golden at all. You know, the young people have an expression about how this sucks or that sucks or so. You have ever heard about them saying that? Let me get Hal. Hal, you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, have you read my book?
Yeah, I read it. I thought it was great. And you're right about...
How can you read it? It's not written yet.
Bill Putnam says it hasn't been written yet.
Okay. Oh, well, all right. I understand that, but... I think you're right about the golden years are not golden at all, Harvey. It's old age is painful. You get uglier, you get smellier, you can't walk as fast, you can't see, you can't do anything, you can't pee without it burning, like it's napalm. You can't go to the bathroom in any normal way. You need all kinds of equipment just to go to the bathroom. You need a new kind of bathroom. You need a whole new vision of a bathroom just to get something done in the morning. You understand?
Of course I do.
Now, that's just one part of it. Now, how about if you don't have money? If you don't have money, you're in trouble. If you do have money, you know what?
Oh, that's my favorite topic. If you do have money, here come your relatives.
That's right. Your relatives start bothering you. They want a piece of the action, and the next thing you know, you want to strangle a granddaughter or a grandson or beat one of your children to death with a tire iron out of the trunk of the Mercedes or something.
Yeah, that boy, you said a mouthful there.
His name's Hal.
His name's Hal, okay. You said a mouthful, Hal. What is this? Is that country music? You better not. That better not be country music. I can't do that. Welcome to Senior Chat, and my name is Harvey Wireman. As every time we're here, we talk about the issues that are important to seniors. And I want to, if we're further to talk about the...
Are you reading that?
No, I'm ad-libbing right now.
Oh, okay.
That's Bill Putnam. You and I don't know each other, huh, Bill?
No, I just was assigned to your program, Mr. Henry.
Can I ask you? Well, I better not.
Yes, I'm gay.
Okay, that's wise. So here on Senior Chat, what we talk about are the issues important to the senior. Now, the book that I've got coming out is called. The lying must end, but I've just been told I haven't written it yet, so the when it's written. Gloria, hi, you're on Senior Chat.
Oh, hi. Harvey, did you write that book yet?
No, they said I haven't.
I wonder what it was that I read then.
Yeah, you told me you read it.
I did. I read something last week. About the golden year. Oh, you know what? You know what it was on Golden Pond. It was John. It was a movie that we saw.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's what I wanted to mention. You were going on and on about the Golden Girls, remember?
Uh-huh.
See that? Right? You see there? See right there? The Golden Girls are the reason I wrote this, or that I'm going to write this book. They make it look like it's a 24-hour sex festival, and they joke and kid, and you'd swear that being old is fun. What a lie, what a lie. You know, what a lie.
Hello, are you there?
You're still on.
Okay. Now it's time now for our news. Here on the Harvey Wireman Senior Chat. Give me my glasses, will you?
Where are they?
They're right in front of you.
No, that's not. These?
No, that has a plastic nose on it. No, don't. Okay, there you go. Here's the time for the news.
You still have a fun problem, don't you?
What's that?
She's on that lady's still on the line.
Is that you, Gloria?
Yes.
Oh, I thought I was hearing a voice. Yes, I do. Time now for the news on Senior Chat. Wasui Pepsi.
Let me see that. It says Warsu's Pepsi.
Warsu's Pepsi. What does that mean? Warsu's Pepsi.
It's a group.
It's a group. Gloria, do you know what that is?
They did Me and Baby Brother. They did Lowrider.
Oh, yeah, I love Lowrider. I know that. Lowrider. Lowrider. I gotta go to the bathroom now. I forget what it's. 70s
funk.
70s funk. Sensation.
Sensation.
Sensation. Wah.
War.
Won't be giving.
Pepsi any peace.
Oh, Pepsi any peace until a copyright lawsuit is settled.
Lawsuit
is settled. The band claims Pepsi used its signature song. Why can't web feet, right?
Why can't we be friends?
Oh, why can't we be friends? In a Pepsi Max ad reports
TMZ.
War is this called war, huh?
That's the name of the group, War.
War is seeking $10 million in damages. I should know these terms because at one time I was a law. How do you pronounce that?
What do you mean pronounce it? You're not reading it.
I know, but I forget what I was, and now I have to visualize what the word is, and it's
lawyer.
Lawyer. That's right. I was a lawyer. I still am a lawyer, as a matter of fact, but I'm not a good one. I'm Harvey Wireman, and we're reading the news. Senior citizens expunge Daira Sokio Network.
Senior citizens expand.
Excuse me. Senior citizens expand their Sokio.
Social.
Social network on Dean.
Online.
Baby boomers and seniors are the fastest growing group of Sokio network.
Networking
website users. Older I'm so tired. So tiring doing this, you know.
Harvey, take it.
Phil. Where's Phil?
Right here, Harvey.
Get him out.
Okay, Bill, thanks a lot. Jeez, this guy's...
Don't worry about it, man. I'll take it. You all right? I gotta lay down. Well, you almost made it to the end of this segment, though. Why does it have to be so long?
It's only 15 minutes, man.
Hey, man. All right, man. Thanks, man. It's only 15 minutes. Oh, kill the music, okay, bud?
That's got the rhythm.
Yeah.
All right, that was Senior Chat. You all right, man?
Yeah, I'll be fine, but I can't. I don't want to work with that queer.
Don't call him that, okay?
I don't want to work with him, though.
All right, you don't have to work with him.
Mr. Wireman, do you still want me to warm up that bag of tea leaves?
What bag of tea leaves?
Remember the chai tea?
Do you want chai tea?
I don't want that queer stuff. That's what that guy made. Give me a cup of coffee. I don't eat that.
Okay.
Get him a cup of coffee.
Well, the other guy made him chai tea.
Get that chai tea out of here. And that wasn't Bill that made that, bud. That was you. You're blaming it on him.
Well, I found it.
that may be well and good. Don't blame it on Bill just because you're... I don't want any chai. You're not going to get me chai tea. Gang members in Chicago are upset that they're not being respected by the police. That's a story we probably won't want to read. And I Heart Boobies bracelets are getting banned in schools across the country. That's another stupid, ridiculous story that we probably won't want to read. But maybe we will. 877, so that's senior chat. 877-876, Phil, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hey, get a backstage pass. Get access to the right arm of this radio show, the backstage pass. You have access to the Phil Hendry Show website. Now, there's lots of radio websites, and I got to tell you, I don't really know why they exist. They're certainly not there to archive great radio. And I'm not saying that radio shows don't do great radio, other radio shows, but they don't do radio that they necessarily are going to save, that anybody wants to go back and listen to. Even as great, for instance, as Howard or Rush are, you're not going to go back and listen to shows of theirs from 1993. On our website, you can do that because our shows are episodic. They play episodically. They are character creations, theatrical creations. And so listening to them again is something that people who love our show, it's one of the reasons why they love this show, is you can go back and listen to the shows again and again. We also have character clips. We also have webisodes, animated features. We also have our podcasts, three different kinds of podcasts. We have a news feed every day, and if you have a backstage pass, you can comment on our news feed, and you get email access to your good buddy here, Phil. So for $6.95 a month, having access to an actual website, an actual radio website with an enormous amount of archived material, and the reason why our archived material is there is because we actually work at keeping it there, which is something that other radio shows can't do. It's impossible for them to do. So visit us online at philhendryshow.com and pick up a backstage pass. All right, police say that a San Diego teen wanted to be an infamous sociopath. Really? Sounds like a worthy pursuit.
Yeah.
An 18-year-old high school student stockpiled bomb-making materials in his bedroom and wrote about wanting to blow up his school, target individuals he hated, rape women, and become the world's most infamous sociopath, authorities said. The only problem with these sociopaths there, what's this kid's name? Joseph Thomas Hansen. Hey, Joseph, nobody really remembers them, you know, except guys like me who bring them up occasionally on radio shows. I bring up Ted Bundy, you know. If I didn't bring up Ted Bundy every now and again, nobody would even be thinking about that guy. Same thing with that other guy. What's the guy? That Kemper guy, but there was one other guy, too.
A sociopath or like a psychopath and stuff like that?
All of them cats. Jack the Ripper. Although Jack the Ripper, he is pretty famous. But he was the first, man. There ain't never going to be another one like him. He was perceived to be the first, you know.
Yeah, how come he's famous and nobody else is?
Yeah. Because he's perceived to be the first, you know, psycho killer, man. Jack the Ripper. I mean, there were ones before him and certainly ones after him. But he, because he was anonymous, because we never found, like Zodiac, they never found Jack the Ripper. You know, but...
You said you know who he is.
I don't know. What do you mean I know who he is?
The other night you said you know who he was.
No, man. I was saying it was a TV show I was watching.
Yeah, you said that you believed the lady. She said she knew who he was.
No, she didn't say she knew who she was. She was a cop, and she was working with another cop, and they reconstructed the crime scenes, and they did something that they do now. It's called forensic geography. Have you heard of this?
Uh-uh.
It's pretty interesting. They try to get an idea as to the area that a serial killer works and where he might live. And where would he live based upon the crimes that he commits? That's what they do with forensic geography. Where does the guy live based upon the crime? And you have to come at it, obviously, from the crime scene itself and from the location of the crimes. So you look at these crimes, you go, oh, wow, this guy committed crimes in these areas. Based upon that, where can we begin to deduce that he lived, you know.
Yeah, but what if he drove a truck?
I don't know, bud, if he drove a truck.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So how did they know about Jack the Ripper?
Because Jack the Ripper didn't drive a truck.
They didn't have no trucks then, man.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
What, are you... Jack the Ripper was on foot, most likely. Anyway, that's the great thing about that show, see? So they restructured or reconstructed the crime scenes of Jack the Ripper, where he was, what time the crimes are committed, see? And the geography of the area, meaning the hills and the, you know, the little valleys, what he had to traverse, how long it would take him, etc. And they deduced that he lived in the area. And they said that also made sense that he lived in the area because no guy could commit the crimes that Jack the Ripper committed if he came from out of the area. He would be noticed. People would say, oh, wow, this guy. And a lot of people did say they saw a gentleman, you know, with a hat or this or that. But most of them said it was a dude with a deerstalker hat, one of these kind of...
like a Sherlock Holmes hat.
Yeah, like a Sherlock Holmes hat. And... They don't really remember seeing the guy before or after the crime, though. So what they were saying is that this guy probably lived in the area. He probably was just a working stiff, probably a guy that either worked on the docks or he worked as a teamster, meaning he was driving a wagon, or he was just a worker, and he was just a regular slob that lived in this very poor, this very, very economically depressed part of London back in the 1880s. So they felt that he was... in fact, local, that he was a working man. He wasn't any kind of a butcher. He wasn't a doctor. That was blown way out of proportion. That he was just a guy who would be able to go in and out of crowds of people and in and out of pubs and in and out of these buildings without being noticed because he looked like he belonged there. And they also got down to, there were a couple of suspects, one of whom was a Polish immigrant who matched this description most often that was given by the people. They even put up a composite of this man, Jack the Ripper, what he looked like. He was dark-featured. He had a big, thick black mustache. He had very dark eyebrows. He had dark eyes. And so they concluded, they felt, now, I don't know if this is true or not, okay?
But they said that's the guy?
That's what they thought, but I don't go with that so much as I do agree with their description of the guy, that he was just a working stiff and a psychopath, a sociopath that lived in the area and could prey on women. They would trust him. He didn't look like any kind of a weird ass, just like one of the regular customers they would have. And so all this other horse dung about him being a doctor or he was related to the royal family, all of this jazz bullcrap.
What did he look like?
I already told you, man. He had a black mustache with a black eyebrows, you know.
Yeah, but any Mexican looks like that.
Will you get out of here?
Man, that's racist.
I'm just saying.
There's no Mexicans in London, man, in 1888.
Oh. I thought it was L.A.
That's right. Jack the Ripper was in L.A. Police. San Diego teen wanted to be an infamous sociopath. Hansen, this kid, Joseph Thomas Hansen, was arrested August 23rd after someone tipped off the police at the school that Hansen had talked about an attack. Hansen pled not guilty Tuesday to selling, transporting, or possessing explosive device and possessing substances with the intent to make a destructive device. One thing about this kid, now they got his DNA, and they're going to stick his DNA on the FBI, website, and it's all over for you, man. Charles Wagon is our technical director, Dan Northcraft, our associate producer and screener, and Jason Rantz is our producer, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Later.
Phil Hendry.